So the subject of the talk is crisis as a call to wake up. And clearly we're in crisis, and it's not small, and there's so much suffering around, and it's local in Israel, which is always been historically a hot spot. Whatever's happening in the world, here it's like an acupuncture point, it's going to be hot. And we've had 1 year of war and suffering and killing, and it's devastating. And out of our control, we don't feel very often we have influence or we can change it. And our response is, we can often feel kind of lost and afraid and a bit helpless and agitated. And somehow, and I get this from many, many people who are old timers in the Dharma, and they say, well, I can't sit, I can't meditate. There's too much going on, there's too much information, there's too much agitation. I feel restless, I can't sit, I can't meditate. What's happened? And I don't know where the Dharma is for me anymore. I don't know where my spiritual life has gone. I feel overwhelmed. A little bit came up in our sharing last night, but a little bit of that. But I'm sure we all can really feel that we swept away, and we can feel contracted with kavets and overwhelmed. The point is that we can't really look anywhere for salvation except inside us. Because you can see, if we start looking outside, hopefully Kamala Harris and the Democrats will win, and no. And hopefully there'll be less wars in the world, but no. And hopefully the climate will be kind to us, but no. We can't look for salvation anywhere. It'd be lovely if it comes, but we can't look for it, we can't expect it. So we really need to go in the opposite direction and say, where for me in this situation is a wake-up call? What can I do to shift the view from being under to actually letting it wake me up to reality? Go in the opposite direction. And my daughter said it beautifully. There was a period last month when I felt biologically triggered. Every boom of a rocket coming and the sirens and the artillery, the Totachim from all around us in Klil, there's Tzahal, Totachim. It doesn't matter where the boom is or what it is. I felt like, it was in my nervous system after 1 year. We've been having it for 1 year. It started in October. But I had a period when I just felt my nervous system was triggered all the time. And I was really not in control of it. It was happening by itself. It was like my dogs were the same. And then I kind of work with it deeply. But my daughter came and said, don't forget, every boom is like the stick of a Zen master telling you, wake up, this is reality, this is existential reality, this is life-death, this is not a joke, this is life-death, wake up. So it's become urgent that we have a bigger picture. It's urgent that we wake up. it's urgent that we go deeply, more deeply into meaning for us. We go deeply into our deep sources and resources. We allow the situation to give us a bigger picture of existence rather than be under it. This is absolutely the center of the Buddha's teaching, because the Buddha said, dukkha, even if it's a little dukkha, just a small one, a mini dukkha, it doesn't matter, mini dukkha or major dukkha, it's a teacher. It's not just for us to be under it. Dukkha is an invitation to wake up. It's the first noble truth. The first noble truth is the truth of suffering that activates us to go on a journey of liberation. So suffering has meaning. Suffering has power to move something in us. So suffering is a teacher, is an invitation. Small suffering, which we sit or we meditate and there's a fly on the nose or there's a noise outside or there's a stupid thought, that's also suffering. And we perhaps, it's easier for us to work with it. We go to the second truth, which is where it's stuck. And we go to the third truth, which is letting it go, being experiencing freedom. And we go to the fourth truth, which is we're on the journey. So it's much more problematic if there's big suffering, and whether it's personal or social, like now. And the Buddha said it very clearly, especially with big suffering, you've got a choice. You either sink into misery, Yeush, or you use it as a search. But actually, every suffering is like that. You either, you know, you go down or you go up. You either sink in it or it becomes a search. And it's what I'm talking about. So the beginning of the wake-up call is that we begin to ask what's important. What really matters right now? What's the meaning for us right now? Rather than just being kind of swept away, what's the meaning? And where's my help? And especially in relation to the Dharma, we can begin to feel, wait a minute, the Dharma is at least a place that is a refuge, is a place of meaning. And we can begin to feel that it's actually needed more now than ever before. The wake-up call might say to us, the Dharma is, for me, like oxygen. Because if I don't have a teaching, it doesn't have to be Dharma, but shall we say Dharma in the very biggest sense, of a teaching about existence, if I don't have that, I'm sinking down into under the tsunami of difficulty. So the wake-up call is a wake-up to questions. It's not a wake-up to a kind of have an easy answer, but it's a wake-up to questions. And questions are super important because it's instead of sleep. The wake-up is the questioning, and it's instead of sleep, or instead of complacency, shana nut, or instead of just daily coping, hit modu dut, vazel. And it gets, when the question is powerful and we don't have an answer, that's when it becomes existential. If we had an easy answer, we lost it. The question is the waking up. And because we're human beings under the sky in samsara. And as Leela said, samsara is not fixable. As Leela quoted Lama Tilman. So we have the question, and that's really a place for us of exploration, of meeting existence that's bigger than us, of meeting the unknown. And we can get afraid there. We get afraid we don't know what's going to happen. We get afraid that we don't have information. We can get afraid that I don't know what's going. I don't know where I am with all of this. And it's okay. But it's a place, the search or the question or the place that we have, which is bigger, our spiritual life, is in a way our hope. So if we need to look at hope here in a different way, it is not hope that something will be better, because clearly it doesn't seem to be happening. We can hope, like I said, that Trump won't get in, but he does. And we can't hope for anything out there. But we can have something which is, instead of hope for a specific thing, we can have something in our heart, which is the positivity of existence, that we are meeting our existence, and there is our basis. And there is our journey, and there is our, it's like the heart is still in life. And it can, as I say, it comes with questions, but they're fine. The only thing we need to do is to avoid traps. So there's a few traps that I just want to mention. The trap of finding diversions, covering over denials, endless movies or entertainments or running away, or it's going to be better over there. So obviously covering over is a trap. The second trap is belief. So it's quite easy. The whole world is super busy with conspiracy theories and beliefs, crazy beliefs, which get more and more crazy the more you see you listen to them. Because pain. Belief kind of neutralizes pain, neutralizes the unknown. And especially belief that blame them, belief that it's because of them, belief that they're the problem. That's primal, that's basic, happens all the time. But these beliefs just cover up our pain. And so it's happening everywhere. And getting more and more, the pain of being lost, people hang on to these amazing beliefs. But there's a place to go which we can go to ourselves, which is not belief, but it has some of that power. And I would call it faith. And faith is much softer than belief, because it's not about faith in a leader, a system, somebody, something, some answer, some easy answer. Faith is much softer, much deeper, and doesn't really have an object. It's faith and trust that life is bigger than us. It's faith and trust in ourselves, that we are big people. It's faith and trust that our potential and the possibilities that exist. It's faith and trust that there's things that we don't know and we don't see right now, but we have potential to go there. For example, subtle places or places of insight and wisdom that we don't see right now, but that's where the faith comes up. Okay, right now I don't see it. Right now I feel, because the glass is not clear. But the faith says, yes, but there is in consciousness the power to see things more clearly. That's faith. Faith is what can jump us to places that we don't know. Faith can open the unknown. We have faith in the unknown, in places that we don't see now, or places that we feel are possible. So faith opens possibilities. In the tradition, the image of faith is a jewel that you put in the muddy water, which is the water of being lost and confused, and it clarifies the water. The water becomes clear and crystal. So the faith is kind of clarifying the mud of confusion, uncertainty, and feeling lost. And it brings, and it opens doors, and it opens doors to us, to the beyond, to things that we don't see. So it helps us to go beyond our own capacity that we know now. Because the mind is very bad at measuring where we are. It doesn't give the true picture. So we say, oh, I can't manage this, or I can't do that. But that's the mind coming up. The mind is not good at jumping out of itself, beyond itself. Faith helps the mind to go beyond itself. And so faith is actually a very important quality in the Dharma. And is always, always needed in small ways and big ways. I never forgotten in one of our meetings in the territories and with the Israelis and Palestinians, and we did so many of them, and we had dialogue meetings, weekends. And in one of them, this 10-year-old Palestinian boy said, when I listen to you guys, Israelis, and listen to who you are, and get a sense of who you are, it's not only that I see that you are human beings, I never knew that before, because I always thought Israelis were just soldiers in the street. I see you are human beings like us. But I grew up to not believe in the human heart and thinking that the human heart is all hard. Now that I see you, I realize that the human heart is not hard, that the human heart is big and soft as well. I have a real shift in the view of the human heart from this meeting with you. So it's kind of moments like that that bring faith and trust in our life, and we need to keep, in a way, looking for that faith. Allowing it, seeing where it is inside us, trusting it. In the tradition, if one of the sources of faith is called verified faith. Verified is, it's in a way proven, horchacha, and it's when people listen to the Buddha, the Buddha would say, okay, you listen to wisdom which is profound and powerful. Let it make faith in you. Let it touch you with faith. So the faith is proved to be helpful. It's the kind of wow. If we have wow moments, maybe small ones, wow. At that moment, faith appears. It's in the well. Small ones or big ones. We could just be outside here, standing under a tree and feeling, whoa, actually everything's okay right now. In this moment, here I am standing under a tree and everything's okay. That's a wow moment. But that creates faith. It gives us a sense that there is a place to go. There is, we can jump there. So a key place, and I'm going to be talking more about this tomorrow morning in more detail, a key place where we are less contracted is if we truly remember ourselves. And it's not easy, because all the kind of flood of stuff we're coming into us, and some of you said it last night, the amount of information, the amount of, I think it was, I think you said it last night, right? The amount of stuff coming in, the amount of processing we need, the amount of confusion of information, the amount of media, the amount of every telephones. And we get lost. Where is me in this? So one of the ways in which we can wake up is finding a channel to remember our big self. And this is, in a way, a theme of this weekend, this whole weekend. And I'll be talking about it tomorrow morning in practice, how to do that. I won't, not this moment, but I just want to say how important it is that we have a channel to remember our big selves, because that place will help us stand in the middle of crisis. It's like we have an address. I am not a small person. I can see stars at night. Never mind what's happening around. I can love people. I can be loved. I can stand under trees and feel belonging to the world. I can experience joy and fulfillment even when there is war. I've read how many books have we read in this room? How many books have we all read? Thousands and thousands of books with full of intelligence and wisdom. We have them that inside us. That's our big self, just a small example. And we don't need to forget all that. That's part of us. We need to have access to it and remember our big self. It gets forgotten, of course. But a journey to it is what also we'll be talking about. I think Leela will be talking about it later today, is refuge. Refuge, I won't say again more about it right now, but it is in the tradition a classical way of remembering our big self. So it is classical Buddhist or Buddha Dharma ways of doing that, and there's also our just personal ways of doing that. But I'm just saying that there are kind of traditional ways of doing that. And Leela will talk about it more today. But it's basically that we win back our attention to what is important. We take back our attention to what is important when our attention gets so easily stolen by all the stuff around, and we win it back and bring it home and feel what's important in my soul. Faith is close to longing, kmiha. And again, waking up is longing. The longing is part of that. Like I said, it's about search. It's not about having a quick answer. And longing is very powerful. It is in a way the expression of our baby Buddha, the Buddha inside us, the longing, adhitana it's called, the longing for release. It's power. It's really helpful. And it's one of the paramis. It's one of the qualities of life. It's one of the awakened qualities of life, the longing. It's determination. I never forget, many years ago, I was in California listening to this Zen master called Harada Roshi. And someone got up and said, I have a question. I get up in the morning, I do some yoga, then I do some chanting, then I do vipassana, then I look at Kabbalah, then I do whatever. And he gave a whole list of practices, and he said, is that good? And Harada Roshi, who was a 70-year-old tough Japanese Zen master, he said, it doesn't matter what you do, just do it as if your life depends on it. So there's the kind of longing, there's the adhitana, determination. There's our hunger for liberation. That's our wake-up call. It's our hunger for freedom. It may be just working in the unconscious. It may work inside us, but we need it. We need to feel that. We need to feel that it's driving us. Our deep motivation. And the motivations that we have for liberation, again, they change, they move. There'll be this time, this another time. But if we have that longing and that motivation, and that's our wake up, it will take us. It will do its job. It's funny because, again, we want an answer. We want, okay, if I do this practice, like with Harada Roshi, will that work? If I go to this retreat, then will that be what I need to do? Yes. But actually what drives us to go to the retreat is the power that will take us. There is a sutta in the tradition called the Sutta of the Logs. It's very lovely. And the sutta says, if you keep going with longing, with your deep motivation for freedom, with your deep love for freedom, then you will get there. Like logs, bule'etz, in the river. The river was bound to take them to the sea, and the logs will go downstream, providing they don't get stuck on the way. And to get stuck on the way means stuck on one side of the river, which is the self, and the other side of the river, which is the world. So if we don't get stuck on me or on the world, what I want from the world, but we are let the logs just keep flowing down the river. They will get to the sea in the end. And I have this very nice poem from Khalil Gibran, which is very similar. and it's called The River Cannot Go Back. It is said that before entering the sea, a river trembles with fear. She looks back at the path she has traveled, from the peaks of the mountains, the long winding road crossing forests and villages. And in front of her, she sees an ocean so vast that to enter there seems nothing more than to disappear forever. But there is no other way. The river cannot go back. Nobody can go back. To go back is impossible in existence. The river needs to take the risk of entering the ocean, because only then will fear disappear. Because that's where the river will know it's not about disappearing into the ocean, but of becoming the ocean. So there's something about longing which is really, really simple, but profound. It's the movement in us that says to our deepest place, take me. It's the movement in us that says, take me. And it's profound, and it does have fear sometimes. But if we see that, you know, the river that goes to the ocean, we realize it's the only way. I've had experiences in my own life where I've been utterly stuck with my spiritual life. Yeah, completely stuck and feeling hopeless, and it's not working, and it's the whole thing is a fantasy. All this spiritual practice, and I've had experiences like that. There was one in Tiruvannamalai in a cave. I was there for 2 weeks, and I was every day in 8 hours sitting in a dark cave on the holy mountain, and I was completely fed up and nothing happening, and I felt like a complete waste of time, until at a certain moment I had this place of surrender, and I just said, okay, Zil, take me. And of course everything happened then. So I want to give a few places where this longing and this faith can be increased and helped, and it can be reduced. So it can be reduced or limited by what you might call comfortable dharma, where we'll only, you know, only if we only go on a retreat if the dot dot dot, you can fill the dots. I'll only go there if the conditions are like that, or I'll only do this practice if it's like this or that or that. Comfortable dharma, and it's human. Conditions need to be right, and then. But it's also limiting us. Sometimes they're not right, but that's exactly where we need to be. And just put up with it. Remember being going to ashram and for personal practice, and nothing, no one around, kitchen empty, no food. Nothing to eat, nobody there, India, people are off. And next day, no food, nobody there, nothing to eat. Eventually finding a banana. So conditions, the Buddha also gave an example of this. He said, sometimes we are like a person who is in a burning house. And people come and say, leave the house. You can come out. We're here to rescue you. Basically, the teachers or the teaching comes and says, I'm here to rescue you. We can take you out. And the person inside the house, the burning house, says, well, first I need to see if it's nice weather outside. Tell me, is it raining? Is it a nice day? Comfortable dharma. Another place that is contracting the longing is, like I mentioned before, measurement. If we measure our capacities, we lose trust in a way. I'm not good at this, I'm not a good meditator, it doesn't work for me. Self-worth, discouragement. And then the faith helps. And another place, which is also a text, which I like, which is very relevant to us, is called the Heartwood. And the Heartwood Sutta is a kind of exhortation, an encouragement from the teacher, teaching the Buddha, to go all the way. And the image is of a tree. And if you just say, okay, I'll just have some leaves, that's it. And then the image is like, well, it's just being a Buddha, bit of a Buddhist, you wear the clothes of a Buddhist, or you say, I am in this practice, but you really don't actually practice. And that's just the leaves of the tree. And the second stage, you have to go further, you have to go beyond. So small branches are ethics and virtue. Say, oh, I live a good life. And that's really, really common in the Buddhist world. Millions of people say, I'm a Buddhist. How am I a Buddhist? Because I'm kind. I give charity, I give food to the monks. Millions of people in Thailand and Burma and so on, I give food to the monks, and that's my practice. Which is great, but it's still the small branches. It's not the heartwood. Bigger branches are samadhi, if we really start to practice, if we really meditate, we really go into the practice, and we learn to practice, we learn states of mind, we meet concentration, we meet insight, the path of insight through meditation, and that's bigger branches. Or it's still not enough. The main branches would be what's called knowing and seeing, meaning insight, meaning the fruit of the practice, that we really see things more deeply, the wisdom mind that sees non-self, anatta, that sees anicca, that sees the nature of reality, the knowing and seeing. But the heartwood, of course, is liberation itself, is the heartwood, the libat aids. So it's a nice text saying, don't stop with small benefits. Go all the way. Our faith and our waking up is increased. Firstly, being ready to pay a bit of a price. It doesn't come for nothing. Also a traditional image, the snake comes out of its old skin, but it has to kind of wriggle and get out. It's not so easy to come out of your old skin, to transform. So being ready for that, yes, sometimes it's not so easy. non-measuring, the opposite of measuring, is just not having the need to measure things. We don't know when things are happening. We don't know when there'll be a moment of clarity, of breakthrough, of insight. We don't know. We can never really measure it. Again, the Buddha said, an image of that is we never know when an axe is actually blunt or sharp, what point it becomes blunt, or what point it becomes sharp. There's no one point, say, now it's sharp or now it's blunt. We never really know. And another place which is more subtle, which is in the non-duality world, is that the ending is also the beginning. So we want to go there, but in some way we are already there while going there. In some way we're already awakened while going on the journey of awakening. Otherwise we couldn't go on the journey of awakening if we didn't have any awakening already there. So it's in the non-dual tradition. The beginning is also the end. That means this moment, the beginning, this is it. It has in it everything. So there's a place there which we can actually, not completely beyond. We can actually feel it. There's certain, this moment is actually good enough. This moment is it. This is it. And we have that those experiences, and that is the beginning is also the end. So we can always go to the biggest place that we can imagine for ourselves. We always go there. We always look for the most profound place. We look and trust our Buddha nature. And yet we know it has dialogue with a human nature. Our human nature and our Buddha nature are talking to each other, having interesting conversation inside the soul. And it's a lot of allowing space, allowing our space inside, allowing our love, allowing the mystery. It's a lot of that sense of allowing. And that takes us on the journey. And allowing not knowing. That we can't know. It's not about knowledge. It's much more about mystery. Okay, so there's some directions. And I'm happy to have questions, responses to Leela and myself.